Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. Like, I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below.
So Susan Harper is one of the founders of Continuum with Emily Conrad. It is a movement inquiry. She is an international Continuum teacher and developer, a heart and soul counselor, creative instigator, and inspired teacher of perceptual and movement inquiry. She opens portals of exploratory consciousness, and I have had direct experience of that. So Susan, the first time I saw you, I think many people have seen this, I actually posted on the Embodiment Conference page before you were even invited, before you were in it. And it's that video of you leaning forward with your back just rippling and waving. Can you tell us a little bit about how, and this, let me also say, this conference, this session is called Eyes of Wonder, and it's about the perception of wonder. So that, seeing that video changed my perception and made me wonder. So if you would like to tell us more about that.
So that was filmed when I was a young woman, oh my goodness, like 40 years ago. And in the deep art of continuum, we're tending what it is to have a fluid model, a biological model, not a mechanical model, not a cultural model, but what does it mean to help our fluid nature and our fluid bodies express the way water does, to be in current and wave and pulsation and to arc and to curl, and to deliver one's consciousness, personality consciousness, let it go, come into the way of water. We're composed, when we start out, we're composed of 99% water, and by the time we're 90, we're about 45% water. We're kind of a big drying out process throughout a life. And with the waters that we have, maybe about 70% right now of my organism is composed of liquid in the various forms of the interstitial fluid of fascia and the cerebral spinal fluid and blood and the synovial fluid and just all the fluids of our body that are utterly and completely connected to all of the forms of water on this planet. And in the wave motion, there's this surrender, kind of an initiation of moving like water, and then a place where there's a deep surrender to the movement of water, and where the capacity that water has to keep forming and dissolving and shape changing happens. And so in that time, we were playing with wave motion through the whole length of the body. And Emily filmed that. Someone was filming both Emily and myself. And there is something about that. Like, often in continuum, we're demonstrating in movement as a way to speak from one organism directly to another, below the level of wording, below using any kind of language, no matter what the language is. Because there's a kind of broadcast from liquid presence, from liquid qualities, from one organism to another. And it has that quality of inspiring, because we're, especially back then, we were not used to at all seeing bodies move like liquid. We were used to a mechanical model and everything done to a count, and having a kind of mechanistic, which is a reductionist view, applied to a living process, the body, which is filled with so many intelligent movements that's so utterly and completely interconnected with all of the elements in the planet, on the planet, in the cosmos. Yeah, so I'm glad that it was inspiring to you.
It led me into continuum. And I thought, oh, that, I want to do that. And I've had a lifetime as a dancer. But I want to ask you about I know that when you first took the first class with Emily, you didn't think of yourself as a dancer. So you almost didn't go. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So this is the dance of limited self-description. That I was having a very limited self-description. And this is something that almost all of us are challenged by and struggle with. We form certain conclusions about ourselves that are just completely not true. And so my mother talked me into doing the first workshop with Emily, and I was like, no, I can't. I don't know how to dance, because I didn't know how to dance with a count. I didn't know how to move and keep a count going. So I had created a wrong conclusion, not creative, not a dancer. But I went to this first workshop, and I was completely opened in the first, it was a 5-day event, in those 5 days, by a whole way of listening and moving and sensing that was just completely beyond the mainstream culture. It was really a profound way of listening to something that's so primordial inside all creatures, all of us, inside the intelligence of the whole planetary body. And to be able to have a felt sense way to touch that, and to kind of start a movement and then have the movement begin to carry one and deliver one into a far greater field of possibility. There's something so utterly and completely life-changing, identity-busting in that moment, because we're all of a sudden tasting more of the totality of reality. We're tasting more of wholeness than whatever limited version we've come up with up until now. Sometimes people ask me, are you a dancer? In a conventional sense, no. I have no training whatsoever in dance. But over the years, just listening to different pieces of music, I would start to move, and someone would say, oh, you must have studied salsa, or you must have studied African dance, or you must have studied ballet. No. But every single dance form that has ever come into existence was originally someone's improvisation. Someone was dreaming that, or someones were dreaming that into existence, or being dreamed into existence, we could say, by the greater creativity, by the greater wholeness. So how do any of us get a chance to taste that in movement? Means it, you taste it in your entire being. Yeah.
So that brings another question. In your interview, I think with Sylvain, you talk about being with Emily and being in a room with loads of people, and there was music, and there was like this shift. She had talked about the planetary unfolding, and this shift of consciousness started to happen, or this shift in the whole room, and you could feel what that was. Can you talk to that? Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the whole notion that creation is not a finished product, that's the kind of commodity thinking that we have in mainstream culture, that creativity and the creation of creativity is an unfolding, participatory, deeply co-creative process that all of us have the possibility to be engaged in. And Emily was sensing that by what was happening in the room in terms of the kind of co-creativity that was occurring. And she was in a speaking to this planetary unfolding of exploratory consciousness in a way. We didn't use those words exactly at that moment. And the man who was my husband at the time, Michael Stearns, was the live musician for that class. And he felt instantly inspired by what she was saying. There was a quality, it's like sometimes someone's speaking in wordings and they articulate something that opens a gateway, a portal to a nonverbal dimensionality of life happening, flowing, streaming. And all of us kind of felt like the hairs rising, like, oof, something. And so Michael Stearns created in that moment, right there on his Serge synthesizer, this piece of music that he called Planetary Unfolding. And as that music was coming on and each of us were inspired in a unique and particular way, but also in a collective way in that room. And we all started to like just dance our part of that unfolding. And but we were seeing each other and moving and relating, and just a greater and greater co-creative play started to happen amongst all of us. And one of those times where you're completely danced, like you're not the one, like from any kind of intellect or manager point of view, making anything up or making anything happen. You're in the stream of creative flux. And the there's a kind of a feeling at the, like when that particular class came to an end and we all were in silence, just like feeling the immensity of what we had just touched and been touched by and moved by. And there's a moment in times like that where you just know, I'm altered, A-L-T-A-R, altered forever, because the wholeness is speaking in the unique multiplicity of ways of each person that's playing, which is a very important theme. Like we have to be able to like let our own flowering forth and receive the flowering of the other, so that there's a true reciprocity of engagement. It's a generosity that's inherent in creativity that has reciprocity all the way through it and through all healthy ecosystems. Yeah.
So I feel like it's important for people to know a little bit of where you came from, how this inquiry started, and learning about your family. That story is very beautiful. With your dad going to Africa.
Yeah, it's actually a very poignant story. I contemplated a lot. My father was growing up in Southern Illinois with in a family of very strong, passionate, evangelistic sensibility. And on one side, there was that passion and a certain form of love. And on the other side of it, there was this kind of culture of dissociation from body, dissociation from the planet, from the respect for the earth. There was a kind of dissociative quality. And in the passion of my grandfather, he prayed every day of my father's life that he would get a calling and go to Africa. And so my father did, and the mission was to save, this is how it was called then, and it's very, it's a heavy piece here. It's like they were called heathens, save the heathens from dancing. And so my father went to Africa, that was then called Southern Rhodesia, British colony. He went to Zimbabwe. And he related there for 5 years with the Shona people. And he thought he was coming to bring this message of love. And what happened through every single interaction was that there became a crack in everything that he believed in, everything that he had been programmed, conditioned, imprinted with, there came a crack. And one full moon night, under the beauty of that full moon falling into his eyes and into his heart, and with the rhythm of the Shona people dancing and their beautiful, powerful spiritual ceremony, my father found himself dancing. And in it, there was such a profound crack that he realized that he was a dancer to his every one of his 70 trillion cells, that in his heart of hearts, that he was kin in this realm of dancing. And so it changed his life forever. He spent the rest of his life looking at how to relate to open culture, how to relate to keep opening like the blindness of mainstream culture, colonization culture, missionary culture, just mainstream culture in the United States. He ended up being the national director for the Vista Volunteers to help the Vista Volunteers with training programs, and that wherever they would go, that they would learn how to listen, to let the people guide what's needed, not impose a view, which is a missionary point of view. So for all of us, you know, sometimes people, as I've traveled so much bringing Continuum around the world, they say, oh, are you on a mission? I'm like, no, I am not. I am like offering out of direct experience what I have come to know, and that whatever it turns out to be of benefit, wherever it's offered, then unconditionally opened to for others to receive that. But I'm not into telling people what they should do, what's right, what's wrong, in all of that sense. So it's powerful. So the last thing I'll say about that is both parents were so deeply, deeply changed, and it brought them into a primal place of value for inquiry. And the value for inquiry is to say, whatever we've been conditioned with, whatever it is, whatever culture it is, whatever way we have been conditioned, shapes our seeing, our hearing, it shapes our thinking, it shapes our feeling, it shapes our bodies. And how do we come to know what's deeper than our conditioning? And how do we touch the deeper primordial capacity to see? Like, what looks through our eyes? You know, I call this eyes of wonder. But what is it that's really looking through my eyes? Or each of you who are looking, what is it that looks through your eyes? It's a primal, primordial seeing. And then it comes through the particularity of my eyes in my physical structure, and it comes through the particularity of how I have been conditioned to see and how the filter has been shaped. And so part of this play is I'm doing this gesture of kind of removing veils of conditioning. Yes. And part of what helps us remove a veil of conditioning is to actually engage new ways of playing. It's almost impossible to undo a habit, but we can create new ways. We can create new ways of playing. And even better than creating new ways of playing is we come into exploratory states where new ways of seeing start to become emergent, and we become aware of that. We catch the moment of that. And as that opens, it starts to loosen some of the old habit. We build new coordinating. What a habit is a way of coordinating with the muscles of the eyes, coordinating with the perceiving. So how do we open that?
Would this be a good time to do a little exploration?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So when I say the eyes of wonder, and when I'm playing with the sense of seeing, I don't only mean seeing here. I mean it more perceiving. And I like to use the ing forms, meaning seeing, perceiving, rather than perception. Because what we've inherited are a lot of kind of old, dead perceptions. And how do we refresh? How do we really come to fresh perceiving? Sometimes the habit of the way we see, it's so embedded, ingrained, imprinted. So one little thing, we're going to play with our eyes here in terms of the way of seeing. And that is just a simple one, which is the capacity to focus in. I focus in my gaze. And another way to do it, it's like a point. I just point to something on the screen. And I ask you to join that with me. Just point to something on the screen and see the detail of it. Go into the color, detail, specificity of it. And then watch what's happened with your breathing. What's happened with your overall sense of fluidity in the structure of your body. In the focal gaze, we tend to come to a single pointed, a little bit, yeah. And we just play with, I go from the pointed place, I just play with, I'm going to still see you, whoever I'm looking at on the screen, but I'm widening the gaze. I'm coming into peripheral seeing, so there's nothing in particular in focus anymore. But I see more, and if you're looking, well, obviously everybody's looking at a computer screen, see the context without looking around. To see the context, which is focal, 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 focal. I'm just widening the gaze so I see the computer screen and I see the context. I see what's behind, I see what's to the sides, and I sense what is to the back, to the above and to the below. Just take a moment, let's just stroke the space above. It's like refreshing the space above. It's a form of perceiving from the heart up into the cosmos, into the sky, that I acknowledge this immensity of space. And I'm just tending for a moment my contact with the ground. So whatever you're sitting upon, and maybe just a tiny little moment of rocking on your sitting bones. Like I acknowledge the depth of the ground beneath me. And between every single one of us, there's the shared ground. It extends under every ocean, under every body of water. So as deep as the ground is also enormous in breadth. So I'm here, Daniela, our support hostess is all the way in London, so I'm in a tending of the shared ground in between all of us up to Canada, down into Mexico. And then I'm like just, whoa, like the moment to take a fresh look into the space all the way around you. Now, most of us are in places we've been living in for a while. How do we take a fresh look? As if you hadn't ever looked around this, your apartment or your house before, is the moment where I'm for a minute, even though I've, let's say, decorated this home, I'm willing to see and not know what's around me. That openness, fresh seeing here. Yeah, we do one more, Laura. We'll do one more. This is, if you can, it's a moment where I see, and then with this gesture, I'm just gonna let the light of the screen, I'm gonna let the, you know, obviously you're looking at my face, just to allow my face to come to you. It's just a moment of receiving. So I look at, or I say, okay, I'm just going to notice how when I see you, what kinds of impressions happen inside of me. I'll say that one again. When I see you, the impression that's landing in me. So I come to a felt sense noticing. I'm sensing, feeling what is happening in the sensations in here. This is a kind of seeing that I like to call see-feel. And it's one of the oldest shamanic plant medicine people's ways of seeing. You stand before a living tree and you drink in the particular medicine of that living broadcast. I stand before another human being and I see you and I allow the impression to be noticed in me of the seeing moment. So it keeps both of us in a relational field. The dance is, how do I be with you and simultaneously be with me? Not, okay, now I'm going to be with you and forget me, or I'm going to be so with me that you don't even exist. The inquiry is, how do I tend the relational field of participating, of seeing, of being together? Okay, there we go.
Well, I'm glad you talked about that, because I was also in the movie. So Watermark Arts and Elaine Calandrea and Rebecca Lawson and Shannon Wild. Sharon Wild put together a movie called The Heart of Continuum, which is about Susan, and she talks a lot. And so I'm drawing some of the ideas to talk to you from what was just so recently talked about. But you talk about Hubert Godard and his how we perceive, and you're just talking about that right now, and like that caught in the context. Or caught in the content. That's what really stood out to me. Like what normally we think of perceiving, I see this, I feel that, I feel this. But when we are aware of how we perceive and how we shift that, and then you talk about the haptic. Can you talk about that just a little bit, that way of the sort of spectrum of that?
Yes, so Hubert Godard is a brilliant, extraordinary French researcher of movement and teacher. And so this he very much emphasizes this, along with quite a few other other teachers that I've had in the past, and also my inquiry through a lifetime. So I'll just spell it. Hubert is spelled like H-U-B-E-R-T, like we would say in English, Hubert, Godard. So this is, with the theme, this is the theme I'm now going to address, is mostly what we are aware of is our content, the content of what I see, the content of what I hear, the content of what I think. In this inquiry, in the eyes of wonder, the art is to become self-reflexively aware of the how of it. How am I? Am I in focal gaze or am I in a peripheral gaze? Am I in panorama? Am I receiving? How many different ways might I shift and play in different ways of perceiving? So I'm not as focused on the what, I'm focused on the how. The focal part of our eye goes to the what part of our brain. The focal part of the eye goes to the cognitive part of us. It goes, what is that? And we tend to go into classification. We tend to go into objectification. And, you know, we're suffering enormously right now from so much objectification, not enough recognition that whatever it is that we do see in the what realm is an event. We call them objects, but there are no objects. There are only events. There are only processes that are occurring. And it's really, in one sense, all subject, like subject, subject, subject. And then even beyond that, it's the verbings, meaning speaking right now happening, and listening happening, seeing happening. And we become more self-reflexively aware of the way in which I am perceiving. Am I perceiving from an already formed attitude? What's the attitude of my seeing? Is it already concluded and pointed and fixed? Or am I in a moment where something fresh is actually happening? When fresh is happening, it opens insight inside of us. We have something that we've never quite experienced before. And it's not just an intellectual thing. It's in the 70 trillion cells when insight is occurring. Like something everywhere is neurally rearranging and meaning is rearranging by one simple shift of how I look. One example of this is like a child that is not seen well in a family of origin. And many of us, just, you know, for so many people, that was the case. And so let's say I didn't have an open gaze. I had a critical gaze upon me all the time. And as a little one, I am going to instinctively create a twist, a turn. The twist and the turn happens in the visceral body, and it affects the spine. And it's like makes a little scoliosis because I don't want to see that inaccurate gaze. I do not want to be mirrored that way. And it's like our gaze is powerful. How we see one another is so powerful. We affect one another's structures. And so I'll come back to the haptic in a moment, but just to say about this, we create a kind of a twist, a clench. It's wise at the time to protect the deep innermost, beautiful goodness of the heart, our heart of goodness, so deep inside. And so that twist is smart. It's like what we need to do to kind of clench down, to not take in, not be so receptive, take it. But then later, it's like we're looking for what helps us unwind, what helps us like come back in and have our own inner gaze of a kind of openness in the gaze to be with what has happened by either being seen that way or by seeing with so much criticism and judgment, which all of us have experienced. In continuum, very often we're bringing sound and touch. We might be bringing sound and touch into a place that has become hardened or clenched or narrowed or tightened. And we're bringing a sound with an attitude of unconditionality, like a hum. And my hand is haptically means I'm open to sense and I'm actively touching. And if you want to play along with me, just take a moment to bring your hands to your chest. And we touch something inside that had to, for good reason, that had to close, that had to cringe, that had to clench. And we're bringing a hand that's open in its contact. It's curious. It's full of inquiry, coming to meet, to be with, not to fix, not to do something, just to meet and be with. And we're going to bring a sound of M. It's a long hum. Mm. You are humming. We'll do a couple more hums. As you hum, see if you can let your sternum and your heart and your lungs and your chest receive the hum. So you're both the musician, you're singing, but you're also the receiver. You're the beloved recipient. Your tissues are receiving this. Whatever has had condition is receiving unconditionality of presence, liquid presence, vibratory presence. Mm. Mm. rocking a little bit with it. So if you're able, in the way you're seated, to rock just a little bit on your sitting bones. This is one of the most ancient universal gestures that mothers, grandmothers, fathers, grandfathers, uncles, aunts, sisters, brothers do with a little one if they have health in them. They rock. And that quality of just rocking your own heart, rocking all that has occurred to you in a lifetime and all the potentiality, and the really the kindness of your attention, your openness to be with, that quality of heart to be with your own unfolding. And you can let that rocking be like snake-like, meaning it swims through the spine. The serpentine primordial consciousness can be here. We are in the dance of offering and receiving simultaneously. So the simultaneity of offering attention, the simultaneity of receiving attention, and then following in open attention, a liquid unfolding. You don't quite know, like wave motion never knows exactly how it's going to unfold next. We want to let the liquidity just have a little moment of streaming, taking you, so to speak. Yeah. And there's a quality in the meeting, and this is partly characteristic of water. The intelligence of water is that it has a buoyancy to it. It's got weight. It has weight relative in gravity. It has volume and it has buoyancy. So when we get into liquid presence, when we start to move with liquidity, the fascia starts to free up, the nervous system starts to have a little play and pleasure. And when we taste that sensuous pleasure, then there's a kind of joy that can come about. And it's one of the qualities of water. If you watch children like get into wild water in any culture, anywhere in the world, get in wild water, and pretty soon there's like a jumping, leaping display of happiness happening if the water is a safe enough kind of wild water to be in. So just to say that. Okay, so just notice a moment how you feel just with a little bit of touch that way. In the haptic touch, haptic, H-A-P-T-I-C, haptic touch means that I'm both in all the little teeny tiny muscles, I'm simultaneously sensing and actively touching. So there's engagement, there's agency, and there's visceral feeling, sensing, happening simultaneously. This is how we are as infants, and all wild animals are haptic. When you see a wild animal, like if it's getting ready to pounce, it's feeling where it wants to go, but it's also feeling on what kind of land is it, what kind of ground that it has to push off of to leap. And so the hapticity is that I'm willing to receive, to be touched by what I touch. So just to give that one more example, since I can show it here on my chest, it's like my hand is the one actively touching the upper chest ribs and the sternum. I'm feeling the substance, the solidity, substance, liquidity of all of this tissue. So then there's the moment as I'm touching this that I allow into my hand, that I allow in the warmth of my chest, I allow the texture of this shirt, I allow the texture feeling of my skin, the little bit of moistness, I allow the substance of the ribs to sing into my hand. So my hand is the one looks like actively touching, but my hand is now the one that's simultaneously touching and being touched. This capacity to touch and be touched is life-changing when we can find this capacity to not be, it's about the simultaneity. Sometimes we're in agency. So sometimes you see people walking or running and they've got the agency. They're moving all over the place, but they're not really feeling their own movement. The movement isn't registering. When the movement registers, meaning when you can experience it sensuously in felt sense, then your body wisdom has the agency part only use the amount of muscles that are needed, not more, not less. Through haptic awareness, then all of our action agency becomes so fluid because we're sensing. If I'm picking up a glass of water here, if I'm just grasping it, I'm spilling the water out. It's uncoordinated. It's like I overuse or I underuse. If I am picking up the glass here and actually really feeling the weight travels down my body, the coolness, the liquidity, it's like there's a love affair happening all the time with the subjective event of water, glass happening. It's touching inside of me. I am touched, altered by this. And I believe that this glass of water is also altered by my consciousness in the way that I address it, the way I perceive it, the way I touch it, that I see the sacredness of this. I recognize the connection of wholeness of this elemental beauty. Oh. Okay, Laura, I could just stream on, so maybe help me. You want to ask me next?
Yeah, so there's a few things that I want to ask you, and one of them kind of goes along with this sitting. You touched a little bit on the twistedness of the trauma in the psyche, how that can twist in our tissues and abuse, but you also talk I've heard you talk about sitting with your own fear of how, you know, to be with whatever is discomforting or uncomfortable for you and how you presence with that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Mm-hmm. Or any other uncomfortable feeling?
Yeah. Thank you. It's a very big subject, isn't it? You know, we're living in times where doesn't matter on which side of the aisle that you're on, there's increased terror, increased fear. We have increased fear of the other. You know, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, at the very time when we least need social distancing, we need it I like to think of it like physical distancing, but not social distancing, because we need our social engagement more than ever. And that includes with all of the parts inside of us. But we've come to this time where we have so much fear of the other, and then we have fear of the other inside of us. And that is whatever feeling arises that is distressing. And this is just part of life. Life is filled with distressing moments where we're beings who need to drink pretty much every day. Like, there are people who fast for long periods of time for ceremony, but you know, we're creatures who have physical needs, and so it's like I get really thirsty. A little moment of distress arises. And then I'm kind of scanning in my circumstance to find, orienting, where can I find water? And taking the agency to bring water into me. And then the beautiful moment of swallowing and having that little one distress moment that was signaling a need, to have that need be met. And then sometimes we're sitting with something like fear. We've seen something, we've heard something. Sometimes, and there's different responses here, because sometimes fear is like It's like a, it's telling us exactly where we need to go. Like, no, you need to go that way, or you need to run, or you need to move, or you need to kick, or you need to take an action. And sometimes we're in fear, like a fear of, through our own self-describing. We're in a fear of, like a kind of litany of self-description that maybe I adopted, a kind of introjection from childhood, like a way of speaking to myself. Or there can be like I'm just scared to try something new. I'm scared of the unknown, like that feeling. And there's a quality overall. And like you said, whether it's with fear or with any feeling that's unsettling for me, is there's a quality of very open attention, felt sense. This is different than mental inquiry. There's a felt sense quality of openness to come and be curious with whatever the sensations are, the description is, what the feelings are that are happening. And the quality of this open attention, the quality of it, it has a kind of unconditional presence. And I believe all the elements help us come to know it. If I didn't learn it from another human being, which I did have good fortune many times to learn from different human beings, but my other teachers have always been the elements themselves. But the way that Earth lends a support for all of us, no matter of what persuasion we are politically, the Earth is there saying, place for you called here, place for you called here, called gravity, gives each one of us a place to be. There's an enormous realm of equanimity that I study every day about how to be with that. How to be with the fire intensity of the feelings when that's what's emerging, when that's what's coming, with the passion. And to be with that, the liquid presence also is a huge teacher. Like, just liquidity, it knows how to like go still, freeze, soften, melt, evaporate. The liquidity of presence is so, so powerful, and space is enormous, huge openness for everything, for every single one of our expressions. It's utterly and completely open to receive our particular expression. So last one on that, it's like awareness is not scared. I'm scared. And so how do I allow awareness? How do I allow awareness to be with that in me that is scared? And at the simultaneity of it, one word is way to say this, it's like the finite and the infinite are held simultaneously together without privileging one over the other. Finite, this particular existence, infinite, flowering, infinite awareness, the capacity to be with whatever it is. For some of us, it's the terrible. For some of us, beauty. How do I be with the immensity of beauty and imagination and possibility that also exists in here? The art is to be with. Okay.
That's wonderful. And I'm glad you started talking about the elements, because I heard like, so when you talk about the elements, you talk about fire in a way that is very exciting to me, because I feel like with the elements, that's the one that I sort of struggle with. It's not as obvious. Would you talk a little bit more about fire?
Yes. So first is simply our warmth, like this, the warmth of this living body. And any of us who've sat with somebody who's died, and there's no more warmth after a while, the warmth is gone. So first is that we are already fire beings. We are already lit up by the sheer fact of us being, by the sheer fact of us incarnating. We are lit up with subtle energy neural firing. Those are all little electromagnetic field. The nervous system is an aspect of the fire element, and it's the warmth, the flame of knowing and seeing in our heart, the fire of our mind, the fire of our genitals, the eros and the passion. And we have both warmth and radiance. So with Carillion photography, for example, or this infrared, like the way people can put on certain glasses and see people or creatures, anything living has fire, has a fire inside of it. And the subtlety of our inner radiance quality is so powerful. It's like each of us in a certain way are like a generative star. And I love this from David Spangler. He says, we used to have this model of always circling around one solar big presence, and everybody hovers around like the king or the queen, this solar person. And he said, but we're moving as people now into a star constellation model. And it means that every single one of us are a little small generative star of incarnating. And our incarnating, it's like co-creative. We need to be able to offer what's in our heart to offer, and we need to be able to receive deeply, powerfully from one another. And then to understand that we're all part of wholeness. David Bohm, a physicist, speaks so beautifully about the way in which we are, all of us, movement streams and embedded in the implicate order of wholeness. And that wholeness is really, for me, it's the deep primal value. It's like, how do I see from the eyes of wholeness, actually? And when I'm in fragmentary thinking, which is any kind of too narrow attitude, conclusion, generalization, open it up again, like at least be self-reflexively aware that you're speaking from a concluded space where there's not much possibility. We have to step outside of our conclusions time and time and time again, come to the vulnerability of not knowing, like an infant doesn't know how to sit up, doesn't know how to crawl, doesn't know how to turn itself over, but it has a primordial knowing of interaction. And out of my desire for the other, I turn myself over. And out of my desire for your smile, I come to sit up to see. Like the rising force is desire to meet this, to meet each other, to meet in this world. And that capacity to this appetite to rise in the nature world is the call of the sun. It's like what calls the plant to sprout. It roots and sprouts simultaneously, and it roots into the earth for support and for nourishment, but it's also rising. It's called into the horizon, and each of us are called into the horizon by the fires in us and by the fires of each other. To say it like this, we are a body of relating, and this body is shaped every single moment by how I'm relating. I open up a pathway of relating. As I open that up, I'm rearranging this physical structure. If I come in and I tend and I listen deeply, felt sense, the stream of what's happening in here, then that is a inner shaping, rearranging the 70 trillion cells, which, by the way, are humming with awareness, humming with interconnectedness of all the planetary elemental forces as intelligences. And we are really like, how do we open one little tiny moment of our relating will open up our heart, mind, body. Yeah.
So we're almost out, but I do want to ask one really quick question. How do you feel the field compares, the field now of working in Zoom and this type of this moment in time compared to like being in rooms together?
Mm-hmm. Main difference is that when we work quite a lot with sound, And so we haven't worked it out yet in the Zoom platform, how to be able to sound with each other all simultaneously. So if we're in a room and there's a whole big room filled with people and we're working with these deep sounds inside and we're hearing that, and then we're getting inspired by someone's sound, or someone's sound is such a caress to us that we come into an open attention and we're like just delivered in movement by the really primal forces of intelligence. It's so phenomenal. It's so beautiful to be in the field in that way. But the field exists. It's so local, non-local. And the field is the relational dance between all of us. So like all of us right now, we're in a field of conversation and of listening and of considering and of inquiry together and of heart singing, hearing, playing here. So the field in Zoom, it's like, I'm surprised at how powerfully we can touch each other. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yes, so welcome.
I think we know. Conversation.
You could just keep going.
2 to 3 hours for sure. So I just want to thank everyone for being here and let you know that this will be available for the next 48 hours. And if you have the means to purchase the package, that goes to, back to support the presenters and everyone putting on this conference. So I would encourage that. Plus there are coffee breaks and there are green rooms for presenters. So be sure to make the use of the tools for building community that we have in this embodiment conference. And I want to come back to you, Susan, and ask you for your number one embodiment tip.
Thank you. It's really thank you. Like the big embodiment is a thank you so many times a day to each and every thing that you meet inside our shared world, to this environment that sustains us, to come in and to felt, sense, feel, and to live with eyes of wonder and appreciation. And thank you everybody who came to listen. Yeah. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Daniela.
Thank you. That was beautiful.